It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob
Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Sorry, Gene. Coming up later in the program, we'll look at a new report that suggests that Wisconsin is lagging when it comes to the quality of teacher training programs.
But first, the United Nations named 2013 the International Year of Quinoa, and not without reason. Quinoa is often found in health food stores, and world health experts praise it as a possible low-cost solution to global hunger.
However, its so-called superfood properties have ignited controversy, especially in its native regions like Bolivia and Ecuador. In Bolivia, it has spurred a fight between producers who vie for the rights to produce it.
And internationally, world health officials are furious at Bolivia's refusal to share the seeds from their gene banks so it could be produced locally.
With us to tell the story of quinoa is writer and photographer Lisa Hamilton. Her article, The Quinoa Quarrel, appeared in the May issue of Harper's Magazine. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've seen, and you write, that there are high hopes for quinoa, not just as kind of a superfood for Whole Foods customers, but as a, maybe a staple, a savior for poor communities around the world. Why are there high hopes around quinoa?
Well, as you probably know, it has this extraordinary nutritional profile, calcium, iron, essential fatty acids, and so on. It's also, most importantly, the only plant in the world to offer a complete protein, which puts it essentially on par with milk and eggs. So it's this incredible opportunity to deliver vegetarian nutrition around the world with fewer resources than providing animal protein requires. The plant is also incredibly resilient. It can handle drought, it can handle cold, it can even handle salty soils. So there are a growing number of people who see it as this potential tool in solving one of the big conundrums that we're facing with climate change, which is how are we going to feed the world's growing population in a world that's increasingly challenging for agriculture.
Quinoa is new to us. It's not new to people in Bolivia and in other nearby countries. What does quinoa mean to Bolivian culture?
When I think about quinoa in Bolivia, I think about the trip that I made there to write this article. And I was speaking with a quinoa farmer in the Altiplano, in the southern Altiplano, the southern part of Bolivia, sort of the heart of the quinoa growing region. And I asked him if I could interview him about quinoa and the sort of conflicts that are happening around it. And he said, absolutely. He said, but in order to do so, I'd like to climb to the top of the nearby volcano, which was sort of looming above us at the time. And so on Easter Sunday, we climbed about 3,000 feet in elevation, already starting out at about 12,000 feet, went up to 15,000 feet elevation to the top of this volcano. And it was a pretty arduous climb. But when we got up there, he looked at me and he explained that this volcano, in fact, was a god named Tunupa. And it was this god who gave the Bolivian people quinoa, according to their indigenous legends. He said, quinoa is the origin of life. This volcano is the origin of life, and it's giving us quinoa is the origin. Our conversation, we talked about international regulations and treaties and patents and so on, but really he was putting in the context of 10,000 years of indigenous history here in Bolivia.
How has a rising interest in quinoa elsewhere in the world affected the people who grow and eat it there in Bolivia?
Well, certainly there have been a lot of news stories over the past couple of years about rising prices of quinoa and how that might be making it inaccessible for the people who actually live in Bolivia and grow it, that this nutritional boon is no longer available to them. That's a complicated story, and it really depends where exactly you're talking about. But what I was writing about this in this article is slightly separate, which is the impact of intellectual property laws, patents on plants and all of the restrictions that come with them. When you apply it to a plant like quinoa, again, there are a growing number of researchers around the world who think that this could be an extraordinary tool for people in marginal lands in rural areas around the world who are struggling to feed themselves because it's such a resilient plant. The challenge is that quinoa, you can't just take quinoa from Bolivia and grow it in, say, Malawi or Pakistan or Iowa or California. The plant really needs to be bred down from this Andean environment, which, as I said, begins at about 12,000 feet in elevation and has a completely different climate. In order to breed the plant down to these different locations at sea level around the world, you need access to the seeds, essentially, to the genetic diversity that's contained in those seeds. Well, because this has, until really the past 30 years, been exclusively an indigenous crop of the Andes, those seeds, that genetic diversity, are held almost entirely by the Andean nations, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia, largely. And Bolivia holds the most among them, about 3,000 different varieties of quinoa. Because of the legacy of intellectual property rights in plants, which people in Wisconsin will be familiar with in corn, but really have impacted food crops of all kinds around the world, because of that legacy, the Bolivian people are not interested in sharing their seed in order to allow the plant to be bred down to sea level and to travel throughout the world. So it's a complicated situation. And in reporting this article, I was consistently struck by the fact that there really are no heroes and no villains. There are just very different world views, seeing sort of food security as a global issue and seeing food security as a local issue. And this is where those two views butt up against each other.
Well, from the point of view of the Bolivian people, say, and the Bolivian government, what do they worry about if they release those seeds and all that genetic information to the rest of the world? What is the downside from their perspective?
Well, you know, I think there are a few different angles on it. Certainly, quinoa's popularity in recent years has offered the people of the Altiplano, which is traditionally a very poor area, one of the poorest places in the Western Hemisphere. It suddenly has this economic opportunity in quinoa, holding on to the seeds, the germplasm of quinoa, allows them, you know, to hold on to that economic opportunity because other people aren't able to grow it on a really significant commercial scale. But that's not the entire story. Certainly they are worried about intellectual property. In the 1990s, there was a group of researchers from Colorado State University that came up with a novel quinoa before there were restrictions on sharing germplasm, and they applied for a patent on it. And that was seen as a threat, not just to economic opportunity in Bolivia, but really as a threat to the culture. In a lot of ways, this plant holds a place for many indigenous Bolivians that Americans can have a hard time understanding. It is both a food and a business. It's also a very potent spiritual force. In a lot of ways, it holds the place of a god of sorts. And so for then intellectual property restrictions to be placed on that plant, it simply doesn't compute.
Yeah, I think you write something also, you write something to the effect of, say, if I patented a version of quinoa, it would be something like an atheist patenting a version of the Bible.
Exactly. It doesn't compute, but what's more, it is a deep, deep offense and really a threat to livelihood and tradition all at once. So So the Bolivians have a very strong and complex case for not sharing their seed. At the same time, there are voices from outside of Bolivia, including the researchers from Brigham Young University in Utah, who are some of the leading voices in sort of globalizing quinoa for humanitarian purposes. These voices are saying this is too precious a resource to be held by any one group of people. These plants belong not to Bolivians or Peruvians, they belong to the world. And furthermore, there are those who make a case that by isolating the seeds, by not sharing that genetic diversity, the people who care about it most, the Bolivians, are in fact putting their seeds at risk of being lost and their own crops of being threatened by that genetic isolation.
On a bigger picture, what does the story of quinoa tell us about the idea of patenting plant genetic materials?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly it tells us that this is going to be an issue that gets bigger and bigger as we move forward into this uncertain future of climate change and all of the challenges that it brings for agriculture at a time when the world population is growing rapidly. It's going to be a significant issue. It hasn't gone away. It's an interesting thing. Intellectual property rights, when applied to plants, it sort of can't coexist with free exchange, which is what existed for, you know, the tens of thousands of years prior to the 20th century when intellectual property rights came into being with regard to plants. That free exchange is sort of trumped by intellectual property rights. Once someone owns some seed, suddenly everyone has to own their seed lest someone else come along and say it's theirs. But this was an issue, actually, that I wrote about recently in a totally different context about a group of plant breeders around the country, several of them actually based at University of Wisconsin-Madison, who were coming up with what they hoped might be a sort of antidote to this intellectual property rights empire that's happening, creating open source seed on the model of computer hackers making open source software. It's something that people all over the world, from Bolivia to Wisconsin, are struggling to deal with, recognizing that genetic diversity is the foundation of adapting plants to new conditions, like those we're facing with climate change and dwindling natural resources that are happening all around us. And yet that genetic diversity that we need so badly is threatened by the isolation that's created by intellectual property rights.
It's a story to keep watching. That's all the time we have. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was writer and photographer Lisa Hamilton. Her article, The Quinoa Quarrel, was produced in conjunction with the Food and Environment Reporting Network and appeared in Harper's Magazine.